It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Wednesday, October 7th, 2020, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 160 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary here with me, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maxion. Mac, how are you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing all right. It's been, it's been an interesting week. I think, we've got some news when I'm ready to share, but I'm doing good.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Anything out of the ordinary? Anything,
Well, last week we found out the results. The day after recording, we found the results of the podcast awards.
We did, yeah. We did.
We did. We even did ourselves a little live stream of the results. And for anybody who wasn't there, we sadly did not win in Games
and
Hobbies.
It's okay, though. You know how I see this, man? I see this as like a comedy festival, because you do comedy festivals. Mm-hmm. And most of the time you do them, it's not to get paid, it's not to win, it's not to come home with anything other than some new friends and some contacts and some networking, right? And to get your name out there some more. And I feel like we accomplished that. In fact, as a result of this, what are we doing on Friday, Mac? Tell the people.
Friday is for the record, but they're not, you know, I'm pretty sure that they don't broadcast live, but the folks who did win at Things I Got Wrong at Trivia have asked Mr. Nice Guy and I to be on the show for one of their upcoming, I'm not exactly privy to their recording schedule, which is why I say it, to one of the upcoming episodes, we'll feature a Maxion and Mr. Nice Guy as guests.
Two nerds doing trivia, just like we kind of do in our Nerdflex segment, except it'll be based on how they do it, right? It's going to be dope. Yeah. I'm excited for it. It'll be great.
Yeah, it's more of a general trivia thing, so we might be a little bit out of our element, but who knows? Maybe it'll be video games. They're the ones picking they've got their quizmaster in their stuff, so it should be interesting. But I will say that you're absolutely right. And even though I am a little bit like, oh man, we didn't win, at the same time, I mean, having a show with Level Up Lauren was lots of fun. Getting to know some of the other people who were in our bracket, if you will, that was a heck of a lot of fun. So yeah, it's not all it's not all doom and gloom. It's very much sunshine and roses.
That's exactly right, man. On my end, nothing like really spectacular, but I'm just hyped to do the pod. I had a lot going on yesterday, so thank you for being willing to reschedule and to do it today on Wednesday, which is not our normal day. But I think we're going to have some fun, man. We got some good stuff to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we do.
Well, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into the gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
I say let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode number 160 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Thank you so much for being here live, and for those of you who listen after the fact, Mac, let's jump right in. This first news story comes from IGN.com by Jordan Olamont. It says, Super Nintendo World is reportedly now planning to open in spring 2021 at Universal Studios Japan. Pop culture website Kaiju. It sounds like the TV show Caillou. Did you ever watch Caillou, Mac? You ever seen that bald kid who acts like an adult? No, my kids used to love that show. Anyway, website Caillou reports that the Super Mario-themed theme park is planning to open early next year. Super Nintendo World was supposed to open July 2020, but its launch was indefinitely delayed back in June in the midst of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Mac, my question for you, do you think that by spring next year we'll be back to live events? Do you think we'll be having Comic-Cons? Do you think we'll be having GameStop Expos and PAX East and PAX West and E3 and this park opening? Will it be a success that soon? What do you think?
I mean, I don't know. I would love to say yes. I desperately want us to be back to live events. I while I'm not going to go to Universal Studios Japan, I would like the option to be open to go to Universal Studios Japan.
Sure.
But I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's way too soon. I mean, this thing, not just in gaming, not just in nerd culture, but it's really just changed our way of life as far as how we live. I mean, when will you be comfortable shaking someone's hand again? You know what I mean? When will you be comfortable going to the grocery store without a mask? When will you be comfortable going to Super Nintendo World? I don't think that it is 9 months from now. I think that this has really, really changed things, and I don't think that we'll be there by then. But more power to them for launching something completely new, or anticipating launching something completely new that soon after a pandemic. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Let's say it's in the US, though. Just curious, is Super Nintendo World something that you're interested in if it wasn't in Japan?
Maybe. It would depend. I don't know enough about what is going on at Super Nintendo World to say, but I mean, if it was close and it wasn't that expensive, sure. I mean,
yeah,
video game themed something would be cool for a change.
Yeah, so to me, like, it can't just be a theme. It really has to be, like, it has to have what's the word I'm looking for? Like a catch. Not a catch, but I'll think of the word after we're done recording.
A hook
it has
or something?
To have a hook. That's the word I'm looking for. See, we're on the same page. For example, a roller coaster where you're wearing a virtual reality headset, and that headset is synced up to some type of Jurassic Park theme that's in sync with how the roller coaster moves. That type of thing intrigues me. Just a themed Mario roller coaster, not necessarily something that gets me hyped. So we'll have to see how they do it. Let's move on to our next news story. This one's on GameInformer.com, written by Daniel Tack. It says, players are always looking to rack up achievements and nail all the trophies in their favorite games. Well, PlayStation announced today that changes are coming to the trophy system, and players can expect to start seeing changes as early as tonight. Don't worry, you'll still be able to platinum Bloodborne, which is one of the hardest games ever made back. Trophies you have earned on other PlayStation systems will carry over to the PlayStation 5 as well. Mac, here's the basics of the changes. First, the trophy level just got bigger. Instead of going 1 to 100, trophy level is slated to expand from 1 to 999. So, Mac, basically they're revamping their achievement system. And my question for you is, as a gamer who's on Steam, do you go for those trophies? Do you collect the different achievements? Or do you just play games and get the trophies organically, get the achievements organically? What's your play style?
Well, I tend to play through once just to play and enjoy. And then, depending on the quantity of trophies, I'll go back and complete, you know, toward the trophies. So, for example, you know, I didn't get the Moonberry on my first time around on Celeste.
Okay.
I had to come back later and put real time and energy and effort into getting that. And, you know, stuff like that. You know, as long as I think it's doable, I'll go back and get the trophies. Something like Master Chief, the Halo Master Chief Collection, which has tons of trophies.
Yes, it does.
I have not dedicated myself to going after those trophies just because there's so many. How would I even get there from here? So, but something with like 20 trophies and I get, say, 5 or 6 on a first playthrough, yeah, I'll go back and play it a second time for the rest of them.
Yeah, so this is something that matters to me, and it's always been so interesting to me that Nintendo has not implemented a trophy system, because I love Nintendo games, and so many of them have replayability. I just don't know why they haven't made something that gives you credit for how many stars you get in Mario Odyssey, how many shrines you get in Zelda. I just don't get that.
So there is something interesting, thanks to emulators and emulation. There is some setup in one of the emulators has a system that has trophies implemented.
It does.
Oh, you're familiar.
I believe it's SNES that does, and there may be others that do as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I couldn't give details, but it is something that I've heard of, I know of, and even though it hasn't been my thing, I would say it's a positive thing.
Yeah, this is something that's really important to people, and I feel like it being done in an appropriate way, in a way that makes sense, is very important. So I'm glad to see that Sony is revamping it. I'm more of an achievement guy on Xbox than I am a trophy guy on PlayStation. I think I'm only like level 12 on my PlayStation trophies, but I really like getting gamer score on Xbox. For some reason, that just clicks more with me, and that's just me. But anyway, let us know your thoughts in the chat if you like to collect those types of things or not. Pazzy in the chat actually says, personally, I quite appreciate the lack of trophies on Switch since it allows me to focus on the game more and less on the meta progression. That's just me, though. That's a really valid point, Mac. You're not worried about doing stuff to impress people. Here's the last point I'll make about this. I feel like gaming has gone, you know, in the past, let's say 15 years, from just playing a game to wanting to show people what you have done, right? We have YouTube, we have podcasting, we have Twitch. It's not just play the game and think, yes, I beat it. It's play the game and give me some type of badge, give me some type of view, give me some type of revenue so that my friends and family and whoever else I'm connected to online see that I have accomplished this thing. And so that's I feel like that's why these trophies and these achievement systems exist. So anyway, we will move on to our next news story, Mac. And this is one I kind of want your opinion on because this is an interesting thing to me as someone who likes demos. I want to get your perspective. This is about Pikmin 3. Have you ever played Pikmin at all, Mac?
No, but it's one of those that's on the list.
Yeah, me too. I've never played a Pikmin game, but here's what's going on. There was a Nintendo Treehouse event today, and Pikmin Deluxe launches on Nintendo Switch later this month, but players will have the chance to sample it before then. During today's Treehouse livestream, Nintendo announced that a free Pikmin 3 Deluxe demo is coming to the eShop tonight. The demo is now live, and you'll unlock some things in the full game for playing it. If you can defeat the final boss at the end of the demo, you'll unlock the Ultra Spicy difficulty in the full version of Pikmin 3 Deluxe right from the outset. Ultra Spicy is a brand new difficulty option for Pikmin veterans that caps your Pikmin field limit at 60, making the experience more challenging. Additionally, Nintendo has confirmed the Pikmin 3 Deluxe demo allows you to carry over your save data to the full game, so you'll be able to pick up where you left off when it launches. Do you think more people should implement this, Mac? Demo progression going to the full game.
Well, I certainly like it. And in those situations where the demo is actually going to be a lead in to the completed experience, I think it's great. But I can certainly see, especially where a lot of the demos that I and you are dealing with are often of games that are in an unfinished form, that's usually just not possible as a result of, technical constraints. But in those situations where it is, I mean, that sounds fantastic.
Now, some people would make the argument, and I don't think it really applies with Pikmin, but with some other games, that allowing your demo progression to carry over gives an unfair advantage. You know, oh, I didn't get to play the demo or, you know, whatever. And now other people are already level, whatever, at level 10, and I'm starting at level 1. Let's say Destiny, for example, your multiplayer progression carrying over. Maybe some of your gear carries over. People could be frustrated by that. Do you think that's a legit complaint, or do you think they should shut up and stop whining about it?
Well, I mean,
That's harsh how I phrased that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Phrasing notwithstanding, I don't think that having the demo play through where it unlocks the hardcore mode, I mean, I would have to know. The only thing I can see there is that unlocking the hardcore mode from the get-go seems really cool and definitely the only thing that really gives you that much of a jump ahead of other people who didn't get a chance to play the demo. I would be curious about what the unlock conditions for the hardcore mode would be in the normal game. Like, if it's a thing where you have to beat it once on easy, then once on normal, then once on hard, you know, beat the game thrice before you can unlock ultra hardcore mode, or even beat the whole game once on hard mode to unlock ultra hard, maybe that would be a bit much, because the demo's definitely not going to be the same length of time, but I doubt that it's going to be something so, you know, expansive, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. And to be fair, when there are those achievements where you have to beat a game on a certain difficulty, usually beating it on a harder difficulty unlocks the achievement for the lower difficulties. In other words, beating it on hard would unlock the achievement for beating it on easy as well. Mm. Just so people know that. Galvatron in the chat says, pre-release demos have declined because developers have limited time and resources. Also, I read that the industry has statistics showing that people are less likely to buy the full game after a demo. I would love to see the source on that. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
I mean, it certainly flies in the face of, you know, how I approach things, but I'm perfectly willing to acknowledge that I might be the exception.
Yeah, me too. I think that if it's a game that I'm trying the demo, it's a game that I was not going to buy anyway, and I'm curious to see if the demo can change my mind. That's kind of how I stand on that. But let's move on. We got one or two more news stories. This one's on Game Informer as well by Liana Rupert. And it says, the ESRB, Entertainment Software Ratings Board, is no stranger to leaking game info before it's officially announced. And with the Wolfenstein and Prey Dishonored collections available now for this gen, it looks like all these all-in-one packages could be making its jump to Xbox Series X and S as well. So, Mac, here's the bottom line. We know that Microsoft recently bought ZeniMax, right? They now own Bethesda for $7.5 billion. Now, it was leaked today that there's going to be Prey and Dishonored collections, as well as Wolfenstein collections. They're going to both be available on current gen, meaning PS4 and Xbox One S, but when it comes to the next gen, they're only going to be available on Xbox. My question for you is, Microsoft owning these Bethesda games and having the ability to put them on Game Pass, why would they even make a collection for people to buy? Why would they not just put the games on Game Pass and allow people to download them and enjoy them that way as part of that?
Well, I mean, presumably, and just a shot in the dark here, because maybe I don't understand, but I suspect that the collection is going to be able to be purchasable on other consoles, so it's likely to be more usable, more for throwing a bone, as it were, to people on different consoles.
And I should have made this more clear, because that's kind of what I was saying. It says that for next gen, it looks like it's only going to be on X and S, not on PlayStation 5.
Gotcha.
But you're right. Your initial thought is correct. If they're going to put it on everything, then yeah, do that. But otherwise, to me, it makes sense that they would just put it on Game Pass, just like they're doing with all of their other exclusives as big as Halo and Gears of War, and just let people play it that way.
Well, and following down this line, because of course we're making, I'm making big assumptions here, but if you can get $70 out of the PlayStation crowd by releasing a collection on PlayStation, but the people on your Xbox crowd already get it for Game Pass, then, I mean, I feel like that's a reasonable thing. It's like you were saying, you know, a few weeks back by, you know, hey, have extra copies, have copies that I can buy in your store if you want my money. Yeah, I mean, maybe this is the way that they split the baby by both having their exclusives, but also being able to peddle that as a collection someplace else.
It could be.
Maybe just the past stuff goes into the collection and on for PlayStation. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm still a big believer. Like, I still really think that Xbox is going to make these Bethesda games exclusive to Xbox. But I think that they are going to do it as a timed exclusive, because money talks, man. Yeah. Put it on Xbox for a year, 2 years. It will make people buy your console or buy your Game Pass on PC. And then later, release it on PlayStation 5, even release it on Switch, but don't do it until after most of the people who have really wanted to play it have done so on your console already. You get more money, and it's a no-brainer. Mac, last news story, and it's not really news, but I feel like it's important enough that we should just talk about it just for a minute. There is a video out there, a 7-minute video of Sony breaking down a PlayStation 5 and showing us what is inside. Now, I did not have 7 minutes to spend watching that whole video. But number one, do you think this decreases the number of YouTube videos we see of people breaking consoles that are brand new? And number two, do you think that this is a good marketing tactic? Do gamers even care what's inside the box?
So number one, yes. And number two, yeah, I think gamers do care what's inside of the box. I will say that I had the opportunity to take a peek at that video, and one thing that kind of stood out to me is that I didn't realize how easily take apartable the PlayStation 5 was going to be. It comes apart rather quickly, and of course with the caveat that it was, you know, it was obviously an edited video. It was a video that they had good camera angles on. They likely stopped and started multiple times. You know, I can see that in the edit, but it seems like it's pretty straightforward, didn't require all that many specialty tools, and the white sides of it kind of mostly just popped right off, which makes me think that, well, they're probably going to have, replaceables.
Okay, that could be. Maybe even, like, different colors, different skins. Dude, that's brilliant. You could be right, because think about how many times throughout a generation these people release different skins, or, like, a limited edition Gears of War Xbox, and you think, well, I really like Gears of War, but I already have an Xbox. Now I got to shell out $300 to get that skin. They could totally release that for $20 and people could be happy. So Yeah, that's a valid point. Well, Mac, that has been our news for the week, man.
All right. Well, now that we've taken a look at stuff that's going on right now, let's look into the past with a little thing we call gaming history. And I just want to note a couple of quick things that occurred this week in years before. Notably, in 2011, we saw the release of Dark Souls for the PS3 and the Xbox 360. And in 2018, for release on the PC, Switch, and Xbox One, Mega Man 11. Woohoo! Yep.
Nice. What are your thoughts on that one? Did you like 11, 10, and 11?
I did like 11. It did something different. It didn't quite feel like a classic Mega Man game in some ways. To me, it feels more of an in-between of the classic and the X series.
Very fair. Very fair.
Which I don't think's a bad thing. And I mean, I will still continue to play it because I enjoy it.
Nice.
But it was a slightly different flavor. But the thing that I wanted to focus on is a conversation about the concept of games with multiple endings. So, the first video game with multiple endings. Which video game do you think that is, Mr. Nice Guy?
Oh, that's tough, man. I'm going to assume it's a game that has multiple characters, and so I am going to go with Gauntlet for the NES.
I like where your head's at. Well, if you Google multiple endings or first game with multiple endings, you will get Castlevania II Simon's Quest for the NES that was released in December 1st, 1988. This is, in my opinion, very incorrect. Because even before then, and this comes down to what you consider to be multiple endings, right? So on the one hand, the multiple endings of Castlevania II, Simon's Quest, has different, basically, end cards. Nothing's different, really, except for the text that scrolls on the end of the screen as to how the game ended. And it's really just a difference of, like, a text paragraph. But if you go back to the release of Metroid in 1986, Samus actually changes, the sprite changes, the graphics change. Based on how quickly you beat the game. And is that multiple endings? I mean, it's just a sprite change, but arguably, text is just sprites in video games.
Were those sprite changes intentional, or were they just part of a glitch, part of a bug? You know what I mean? Because to me, a multiple ending is something that is intentionally put in the game. So that if you make certain choices or if you do something within a certain amount of time, you get a different ending. It's almost like something that you can achieve. I don't think different sprites is quite in that category.
The ending of Metroid, that wasn't a hack. It wasn't a, you know, a fluke. It was designed that
way. Fair enough.
But I agree with you that it needs to be something more than just a cosmetic change to be that sort of thing. But also, just simply text on the screen is not enough, in my opinion, to warrant the first multiple endings video game, which is why I say that December 1st, 1988, no. Castlevania Simon's Quest? No, that's not it. Instead, it was October 5th, 1987, predating Simon's Quest by a full year, the release of Maniac Mansion. It is a point-and-click game. It did get a port to the NES, and it's the first, in my opinion, true multiple-ending video game, because it has three different endings depending upon which of your characters survive the game and the way in which you achieve the ending objectives, which makes sense. This is the first one that I can really say, yeah, this game had multiple characters. At the beginning, you choose the three that you wanted from a roster, from a lineup, and then at the ending was depending upon which of the ways you solved the puzzles on it.
Okay, yeah, so here's where I'm going to counter you, and I'd love to have this discussion.
Sure.
So yeah. I just Googled, because Oregon Trail immediately comes to mind.
Okay.
And I just Googled, when did Oregon Trail come out? It says that it came out December 3rd of 1971. I did not realize that it was that old.
Oh, yeah, it was on mainframe computers back in those days. It was like schools had these mainframes, and so you'd plug in, but carry on.
So you see where I'm going with this, though. Yeah. My point being that Oregon Trail, you can very much get multiple endings.
You failed or you succeeded? I mean, what's the multiple endings on Oregon Trail?
Because you can succeed with not everyone making it, or you can succeed with everyone making it. You could succeed with just a couple people making it, right? Not True. Everyone has to survive in order for you to quote-unquote win. And so I would contend that maybe Oregon Trail is an earlier example of multiple endings.
Does the ending fundamentally change based on, say, the path that you take to get there? Whether or not you go earlier in the spring or later in the summer, or how many people survive? I mean, depending upon is pedantic the right word? I don't know, but depending upon how finely we want to define our conditions for multiple endings, I think you and I can both 100% agree that Castlevania II: Simon's Quest in 1988 is not the first multiple ending video game.
You're right, because it was Oregon Trail in 1971.
I'm very much more of the opinion that something like Maniac Mansion, which had three distinct pre-programmed endings rather than just sort of sprite swap or text swap, I think that's what makes the difference. And we can meaningfully agree or disagree
here. Sure, yeah, no big deal.
But nonetheless, we are 100% in agreement. It's not Castlevania II: Simon's Quest. That game, still notable for other reasons, but not for this. So when you go looking for what's the first video game that had multiple endings, just know Google's leading you astray there, because it's not Castlevania II. But that's just been a little bit of gaming history for us today.
Awesome. It's time to move on to the topic of the week, a segment where we talk about one of the hottest stories in gaming and give our opinions on it. And if you're here live, we want to hear what y'all think about this, because to me, this story is really indicative of the path that Xbox is trying to take. They are focused on acquiring new IPs. They are focused on the software, but they're also focused on doing things that are game changing in an innovation standpoint. So this story comes from GameSpot.com by James O'Connor. It says, Xbox Game Pass can now be streamed through mobile devices thanks to xCloud, which we already knew, making it much easier than ever before to play the Master Chief Collection on the toilet. Mac, you going to play it on the toilet?
No, I had no intention of doing so.
Yeah, me neither. But it goes on to say, but this is just the start of Microsoft's plan for streaming, and Xbox boss Phil Spencer has indicated in a tweet that streaming will make its way to Game Pass on Xbox and PC as well. Now, Mac, that might not seem like it's that interesting. Why would you want to stream it on your PC? We thought the whole point of xCloud is that you can take stuff mobile, that you can do it on your tablet, that you can do it on your phone, that now it can be portable. Well, here's where it gets interesting. The article says, replying to a tweet asking directly whether Game Pass on console and PC would allow for streaming at some point, allowing users to demo a game before committing to a download, Spencer responded saying that they have plans for this in the works. Quote, it's in the long list of things that xCloud team is working on, just a bit further down the list, he said. This means that the future could be a while off, but at least it's being planned, and we could eventually see Game Pass streaming on these systems. So, Mac, in the past, when we've wanted to play a playable demo, whether it be for a Kickstarter or on Game Pass or anywhere, Steam, whatever it may be, you had to download the whole demo. So, I know that you are not a digital guy. I know that you are not a streaming guy. But at the same time, I also know that you're not a fan of the constant big updates that we see in the gaming industry, the day one patches that you have to download and the speed and the data that it deals with. Does this change your perspective on streaming as a way of playing games?
Well, I mean, it certainly makes an argument for this being, you know, for this solving a problem. I would be more compelled by it if it were not solving a problem in the most roundabout way to a problem that they had made.
Well, did they make it or did the industry make it? When you say they, are you talking about Xbox or just the games industry in general?
Just the games industry in general, because it's an industry shift as a whole to move toward the streaming of, the streaming of data rather than the download of data. But at the same, you know, at the same time, I feel like, yeah, sure, it solves the problem. But I mean, you know, there were other ways to solve the problem that address the problem instead of just a Band-Aid.
So what's the problem? The concept of having to download stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, if that is the problem, If big downloads is the problem, then streaming the data is a workaround, but it's a workaround that doesn't address the, you know, that doesn't actually address the problem. It just addresses the symptom.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially where internet infrastructure in the United States is so woefully behind many other countries. You know, the streaming of data, whether it's a large one-time download that we have to wait to complete, or it is a stream of data that continually comes in, we're still hitting the data caps.
Gotcha. That makes, yeah, you're exactly right. And please, people in the chat, keep coming with these comments because we're going to read some of them in just a minute. So Mac, I do agree with you there. And I'll give you an example of why I still think that the ability to stream a game is a good idea. So Xbox Game Pass has a lot of really good games, AAA titles. And a couple months ago, they had Red Dead Redemption 2. Now, I had never gotten around to playing Red Dead Redemption 2, but I had played the first one. I had played some Grand Theft Auto. I thought, you know what? Rockstar doesn't make bad games. I'm going to download Red Dead Redemption 2 on my Xbox, and I'm going to play it, and I'm going to love it. And then when it's gone, I'll be done with it. So I download the game, Mac. It's over 100 gigabytes. Even with my fast internet, it took some time to download. And then the load times were just ridiculous. And so I start playing Red Dead Redemption 2, and it was just not fun to me. It was absolutely not fun. And this is one of the highest rated games of the generation. Many 10s out of 10s. If you look on Metacritic, I would guess it has a 9.5 overall out of 100. 95 out of 100. My point is, I wasted so much time downloading a 100 gigabyte game. Additionally, I deleted games off of my Xbox because the hard drive is not that big. If I had had the ability to stream that game instead to test it out, I would have absolutely done that, and I would have been able to know within half an hour that this game is not for me, as opposed to downloading it, deleting other stuff that I actually liked but had to make space for at Red Dead Redemption 2, and then being disappointed in it. And so to me, this is the way of the future. I really, really like this idea. I know we have some comments in the chat. Do you want to pick a couple of those? Or you can respond to what I just said. Whatever you want to do.
So I'll actually let Pazzy kind of respond / reinforce what you're saying. Because Pazzy ran into this situation. He streamed Destiny 2 while downloading Destiny 2. And he says, well, it's a very first world issue, but just being able to play when I wanted it and not have to prepare hours in advance is really nice.
That's such a good point. And Pazzy, you hit the nail on the head, because have you ever had a friend just say, hey, do you play this game? And you're like, yeah, I do, but I just deleted it, right? Like, so for example, the other day, my neighbor up the street, we were talking about video games, and he said that he really likes to play Call of Duty Warzone. And I said, oh, okay, that's a free-to-play game. What do you play it on? Because I know I have it on my PC. I also know that it's cross-play. And he said, well, I play on Xbox with a group of guys. And I was thinking, well, if I want to really play with them and have the full experience, I'm going to have to download it on Xbox. Now, if I could just stream that game, like Pazzy is saying, I could play it at my convenience without having to prepare hours in advance, downloading a game that is 120 gigabytes, right? Mm-hmm. Having to make space on my Xbox. Additionally, there's always the chance that I will hop on one day and they will have made an update that's 10 gigs, 20 gigs, whatever, and I'll have to wait to download it. So the streaming thing to me is a really good future. Mac, what other comments do we got before we move on to the next thing?
Also, Galvatron brings up that he sees this as the sort of, this is how Microsoft is going to try and get out of games, physical games, and move more and more toward subscription services and the like, you know, a la Game Pass or a la Microsoft 360, OneDrive, etc., etc. And while it's absolutely true that I feel like we've seen over the last 5-10 years how very lucrative the subscription service, the subscription model can be,
yep,
for companies like Netflix and others. I see where you're coming from. I'm not 100% sure that I agree, but it is a solid point.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Well, I don't have too much more to say about this, but I do think that it's a smart strategy for the reasons that I already mentioned, right? You can play at your convenience with your friends. They can say, hey, come play this with us, and you don't have to think, oh, I don't have that downloaded. You can just go stream it, assuming that you have the service, right? You don't have to make hard drive space. It's going to decrease the need for us to have external hard drives. Our good friend Spenis, friend of the show, is always talking about how he has all these external hard drives for his games, and that is great, but how nice would it be to be able to stream it? Now, Mac's points are valid too. Being able to stream it really does not solve the problem of potentially running out of data if you have a data cap with your IP, because streaming stuff does take data, just like Netflix, just like internet, just like podcasting, whatever.
And I will say that arguably, the way that video games tend to work is they usually have a base amount of data that's necessary for core instructions, and then there are the assets that are on top of that. And if a game is 100% streaming only, then even if the core data is being handled server side, then you're still constantly streaming. If nothing else, you're constantly streaming assets. And if it's a game that you play frequently, you will 100% burn through more allocated data doing streaming over time than you would just by having downloaded it once as a big chunk. These are fundamental problems that aren't getting addressed, but then again, this is what happens when you go after treating a symptom rather than the problem.
No, these are great points, Mac. And another thing to your point, and then we'll wrap, unless you have other stuff to say, is if you think about the concept of people who play stuff competitively, or even if you're playing something cooperatively, there's absolutely no way that the performance of a game that is being streamed and played over the internet at the same time is going to be as good as performance of a game that is downloaded and then streamed over the internet at the same time. So if you're trying to get those shots off in Call of Duty or Halo, and you're also streaming it, it probably isn't going to be able to compete with someone who has it downloaded and is just playing it over the internet. That's been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now let's look at a crowdfunding effort that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. I'm going to present a Kickstarter project here for you. I'll paste a link in the chat. And we're going to talk about, some of the pluses, some of the minuses of it. And then we're going to say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kick-started. And we encourage you to get in on the fun with us. This is different for me. I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone. There is the link. We are looking for Neurocracy. This is a primarily text-based game that's supposed to occur in the year 2049. The idea is that, as I understand it, you are investigating an assassination by basically going down a Wikipedia rabbit hole. The idea of the game is that it's in the future. There's all these sorts of things going around, geopolitical drama and the like, loosely based on COVID-19. You will experience the game and the game world through their equivalent of Wikipedia, Wikipedia posts, and essentially it basically winds up being a text adventure,
okay,
which I have some feelings about, but I'm gonna put that off to the side for the moment. What they are looking for to get this game off the ground is $12,000. They've got about $4,500 right now, and they've got 20 days left to go. If you were curious about getting the game upon release, your minimum buy-in is $13, £10. There are other things going on here. There is a demo available, so if you're curious and interested in trying it out, you've got the option with that playable demo that you can download and take a look. They have a breakdown of what exactly they're going to do, and they're trying to release March 2021, so it's not too frightfully far away. Mr. Nice Guy, I know I've done an amazing job of pitching this game.
Sure, sure.
What do you think?
So, I mean, my fundamental problem with this is that it does something that you constantly, that we were literally just talking about, that you don't like, and that it doesn't seem like if you kickstart this, you actually get a physical copy. You get access to the game via a login. And so, I mean, once again, what happens if this thing goes bottoms up? You know, you just no longer have access to the game as opposed to having it on your hard drive. So that's the first thing I don't like about it. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I do.
The other problem is, I mean, I haven't watched the video, to be fair. I'm going to click on it right now and try to...
Yeah, basically, it's just going to show you Wikipedia articles. It's going to show you something approximating 2049 Wikipedia articles, and then it'll, you know, be a developer sort of face thing.
So how do you pitch a text-based game with just text, right? And yeah. And I'm a visual guy. Like, I'm not saying that video games cannot be different things, mm-hmm. but I like to see some of the artwork. I like to see some of what you've done. I like to see some of the quote-unquote gameplay. And this game is just so far out of the box as to what we normally do and as to what I normally play that I don't really know how to judge it. Mm-hmm. This is literally a wall of text in the Kickstarter, and there's no way for me to know if this is going to be good, if it's going to be fun.
Except for by the demo.
Yeah.
And so it's got that. If it didn't have a demo, I would not. I'm with you. This is far outside of my box as well. I normally would not have considered this one, but it had a demo and I appreciated that it was outside of the box. Who wants to see me do another Kickstarter on another game? It's basically just a side-scrolling platform action-adventure type thing. You know what I mean? I'm doing that all the time. That's my favorite genre.
No, it's cool that you're doing something different. I just think those are my two main issues with this. Mm-hmm. And I think the text-based adventures are not a new thing. That's something that we've seen before. We've seen point-and-clicks before as well, right? One of the better point-and-clicks of all time, The Walking Dead, right? Made by Telltale. Fantastic game. This one just doesn't catch me. And I don't feel like I have enough information, even based on their Kickstarter, to really know if I want to support this.
Yeah, and I'm not sure either. I'm kind of on the fence. On the one hand, I love text adventure games. It takes me back. On the other hand, a game based around the idea of falling down a Wikipedia hole is not exactly that appealing to me. But nonetheless, I think it's far enough outside of the box that there are people who would like this, even if it's not my thing. I think that I think it's something that definitely appeals to some people. There is a thing, it's like a physical thing, at least it was, where you could basically order a box and that box would come to you and you could basically try solving a murder through the clues inside of the box. It was sort of this prepackaged thing, so if you wanted to do a little bit of sleuthing, and while I find that intriguing, I don't know if that's something I would pay for, but I know lots of people like it, and I feel like this is very much the same thing. I think there are people, there is an audience out there that wants this. That audience is not me.
So real quick, because I know we're short on time, what does the replayability look like with this?
I have no idea. I haven't tried the demo yet, but I assume that because you're trying to solve the same murder or the same assassination, I don't know how there could be that much replayability.
Okay. So, all right.
Yeah. So I have to say Kick, just because it's not my thing. I couldn't do this myself, but good on you guys for having a demo.
I mean, I say Kick because we're getting a single player game that has potentially no replayability. And you're not even getting a copy of the game. You're just getting access to play the game, which means that you need to be online, number one. To me, this is just silly. Like, maybe even do a monthly subscription service for this. Let people pay $5 a month if they want to play it. But don't take $13 from people. Not that that's a lot of money. But don't take money from people and then just give them access to something that they can only play once. That's my opinion. So my vote is Kick.
All right, and so far it looks like Kick's, I think Pazzy's leaning toward Kickstart, which would make me very happy because, like I said, I'm more curious about, I think there are people out there for whom this is something that they want to see, and I want them to have this kind of a game, if that's what they're into. That's been Kick or Kickstart.
Fantastic. Well, now it's time for Nerdflex. Woohoo! A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and you never quite do. Well, Mac, I listened to our last week's episode, and I listened to your Nerdflex audio sound that we have, and mm-hmm. I know exactly what video game it is from, and I will not say it on here. Listen to it and try to figure it out if you want to know what it is. but I think you can get it. I think you can get it.
I think so. I would be more impressed if people got the one before this most recent.
Yeah. So check out episode 159 to listen to that. And if you guys are and girls here live have questions for us, type those into the chat right now. And in the meantime, Mac, we'll start with a question from our test bank. Now, here's the first question. Name the main character to whom Augustus Cole is a sidekick. So I don't have any idea, and I'm looking at you and thinking that you don't either based on your facial expression. Am I assuming correctly?
Yeah, you assume correctly. Augustus Cole is the sidekick of...
Augustus sounds like almost like a medieval, right?
Yeah.
Would you say? So I'm thinking like maybe Assassin's Creed, but I can't think of an Assassin's Creed game where there was a sidekick.
I mean, sure. I was actually leaning more toward like Augustus sounds like someone who would be with Nathan Drake or something like that. You got Nathan Drake and then Augustus Cole. I mean, I don't know. So yeah, no idea. But if you want to say something like, if you want to say Ezio or... Yeah, Ezio, that's the name.
Ezio from one of the earlier Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, sure. I think we're definitely getting this wrong. What's the answer?
Yeah, so let's see. The answer is, Marcus Fenix from Gears of War.
Oh, I've never played a Gears of War game. Sorry.
I've only played the most recent one, which was Gears 5, and I loved it, Mac. I don't think it's for you, but it was fun.
Okay.
Cool. So we have a question in the chat.
We do have one from Spenis about Super Mario Sunshine, a game I have not played, so I'm going to have to rely on
you
for
this. Oh my gosh.
One.
Okay.
The question is, in Super Mario Sunshine, you can unlock Yoshi. In which course in the game do you complete the fourth episode of to unlock him?
Oh my gosh. No multiple choices, guys? Come on now. So I'm playing Mario Sunshine right now with my kids because that is the one Mario game that I have missed. And so I don't even know the answer to this question. We might go 0-0 today, or 0-3. I'm just going to say you unlock him in the Mushroom Kingdom. Like, I literally have no idea what the answer to this question is, man.
If I had any knowledge of Super Mario Sunshine, I would try and weigh in. Sunshine's the one where you're cleaning up graffiti, right?
Yeah, you're cleaning up sludge and that kind of stuff. He has this water gun on his back, yeah. And he's cleaning up stuff.
I mean, I'm familiar with it in the abstract, but yeah, I'm gonna say Beachside Villa.
Okay, Spenis. We're going to start requiring multiple choices for these questions. But what is the answer to that?
The answer is Pina Park. Super Mario Sunshine is set at Isle Delfino, and Pina Park is in the amusement park course. So Pina Park would be the correct answer to
that. Okay, fair enough. Mac, should we go back to the test bank for our third question? What do you think, man?
Yeah, let's go back to the test bank. I don't see it. I don't
see
the
one
yet.
So, there's one right there. Oh my gosh. Y'all are asking difficult questions today and no multiple choice, but we'll go with it. We'll entertain. This one's from Spiero of the Morgantis. In Dragon Age 2, what is the only way to save your sibling in the Deep Roads?
I've never played Dragon Age 2.
My gosh.
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, I've played the original Dragon Age. And I am going to guess that you have to get a potion that will save their life from whatever ailment they are suffering for in this part of the game.
Okay.
My gosh. All right, let us know the answer in the chat.
I apologize, Mr. Nice Guy, because this might be... This might be the first ever clean sweep. In my defense, I've never played a single one of the games that we've referenced
There's
this evening.
A first time for everything.
It's true.
And next time, Mac, we are going to demand multiple choices.
I think especially with these with these deep draws that that we seem to be getting lately, but that's really on us, Mr. Nice Guy. We have very proudly touted
yeah.
our prowess for quite some time, so we had it coming. We really
Yeah, and I know some of you still have questions in the chat. We'll have to get those next time. We only do three per episode. Max, should we keep things moving while we wait for Spiero to type the answer in the chat, or should I just Google that answer?
You must have Anders in your party to lead you to a group of Grey Wardens so that they may perform a ritual to save them from the Dark Star blood poisoning.
So that was close, like... to what I said, but it doesn't involve a potion, so yeah. I'm not gonna say that I got that right.
Yeah, no, we didn't get that. You were correct that there was an ailment, and that was the source of the desire. So I mean, I feel like partial credit for you on that one, but you know, nonetheless. So let's move on now that it's been now. That we've done kick or kickstart. Let's talk a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
All right. We're talking about a little bit of Nintendo legalese today. Back in May of last year, Nintendo went after UberChips.com. Back in May, like I was saying, and the case wrapped last week with Nintendo winning $2 million as ordered by a court in Ohio. Additionally, the court ordered that UberChips hand over its website to Nintendo, order that they cannot sell similar products and have to relinquish or destroy Nintendo's choice all of the stock it currently has. If you were wondering what exactly UberChips.com was into, and you thought, sounds like Nintendo circumvention devices, you would be correct. They made essentially mod chips and the like for Nintendo consoles, 3DS, Nintendo Switch, and so on and so forth. Very interesting, but sort of as a side note. Days later, however, two members of Team Executor were arrested, including one Gary Bowser. Pause for laugh track. So what these two have to do together directly? Not so much, but they are both legally related, and they both happened within days of each other, so I think I should mention. Oh, and also, UberChips was selling stuff from Team Executor. So maybe there's a connection. I doubt it, though, because earlier in 2019, a grand jury was called. Quick side note, for reasons that I don't understand because I'm not a lawyer, grand juries aren't considered impaneled, so double jeopardy isn't a thing with grand juries. You know, just a little something interesting there. And they made an indictment on August 20th. Now, indictments are not convictions, they are just formal charges and the first step in criminal proceedings. And so, Team Executor, three people of their team were, you know, they issued indictments for them. And two of them were successfully arrested, as I said, including Gary Bowser. But what crimes could they have possibly committed? Prepare yourself, Mr. Nice Guy. Prepare to be shocked.
My body is Reggie.
Conspiracy and the commission of wire fraud. Now, to keep in mind, wire fraud just means you do it basically electronically, or you do it through wires, whether that's telephone fraud and otherwise. And the fraud specifically noted was not against, was committed against Nintendo, not by customers, depriving them of revenue. You would think that it's just like, oh, I committed fraud, I sold you fraudulent goods. No, this is the type of fraud of depriving Nintendo of revenue. So that's the fraud.
$2 million is a lot of money. It's pennies to Nintendo.
Yeah, they don't care. They just care about shutting it down, which is why the big victory for them against UberChips was getting the website, taking them out of the game permanently, and getting every one of the mod chips that they had in stock turned over to them / destroyed. That's the victory for Nintendo, not the money. But for Team Executor here, additionally, conspiracy and trafficking in circumvention devices. That's... they're making those things. And keep in mind, conspiracy just means that it's an action that is not legal and you agree to do it with somebody else. It's something you plan.
In
you
principle,
plan to do something not legal with somebody else. That's the conspiracy. And trafficking circumvention devices, of course, they were selling those things. Conspiracy. Already hit that one. And then money laundering, which is interesting. But keep in mind, the most of us, we think, you know, oh, we're running our money through, you know, a secondary thing. We're laundering the money. We're Breaking Bad. But actually, the legal definition of money laundering is just laundering comes into play when you attempt to conceal who it comes from, where it comes from, or to whom it's going. All you need to do is basically fib about where the money comes from, where it's going, or how you got it, and that's money laundering. So anyway, if I were to say that these guys were arrested for wire fraud, and for money laundering, you'd be like, oh man, these are some bad guys, these team executor. But it's not so, you know, but when you actually go through the things, I mean, team executor may or may not be doing something that's good. It's not, I'm not going to opine on that, but you know, sometimes I feel like it's easy for us to look at like the legal terms behind something and come to a wildly different conclusion than what the legal terms are actually meant to convey. And
that's exactly right.
Just taking that all together, I know this isn't the most interesting legalese ever, but I just wanted to throw that out there because it's happening right now, and if you just read the big, bold words, you would be like, oh my gosh, am I funding domestic terrorism with by buying a Nintendo, you know, a chip, by buying a, you know, a thing to chip my Nintendo Switch, then you might come away with that idea, but that's in fact not what's going on, so, but... Anyway, I'm not a lawyer, and that's just some legalese.
Awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. That has been our show. But before we go, we'd like to do one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, maybe even some sports ball if Maxion decided to change who he is this week. We talk about the games we've been playing on Xbox, PlayStation, PC, mobile, and other devices. And if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know in the chat the cool nerdy stuff you've been into, because we're always looking for more cool nerdy stuff to get into. So do that right now in the chat. Mac, why don't you lead off this week, man? What have you been watching and playing?
Sure. Finished off Cobra Kai. I'm not sure if I mentioned that last time. Watching some New Girl, always watching a little bit of Star Trek, and probably going to get into something new here, but still figuring out what that is. So remember, let me know, because I'm looking. I played a little bit of Minecraft, actually, this weekend, and played, of course, some tabletop RPGs, some 5th edition D&D on Mondays, nice. Some GURPS on Thursdays. Things are looking interesting for our motley crew. How about you, Mr. Nice Guy?
Dude, so I haven't watched a ton, but I did watch The Walking Dead last night. The season 10 finale finally came out, and I know you're not really into the show anymore, but I will say this, I really enjoyed the finale, and I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens next season. I will say that the conclusion at each season is getting very cliche, but we'll leave it at that. As far as what I've been playing, Mac, I am all about that Super Mario 35 right now. And I'll explain what that is for those who don't know. I think it's a legit Game of the Year candidate. It's basically a Super Mario Brothers Battle Royale. You're playing through different levels in Mario 1, the original Mario 1, against 35 players. And anytime somebody dies by falling in a pit, getting hit by a Goomba, whatever it may be, they get eliminated from the game. Now, the way that you win is by staying alive the longest, but there is a clock that is running down with time. So every time you kill an enemy, you get more time. If you kill an enemy while with a star power, you get even extra time. And it's just a fun game. You're not playing through the levels in order. You're kind of like warping back and forth, and there's strategy that goes into it. Every time you get 20 coins, you can use it to get a power up or a POW that will eliminate all the characters on the screen. So that's the elevator pitch for Mario 35, and I'm really, really having a good time with it. Other than that, a little more Donkey Kong Country 2 and some Mario 3D All-Stars with the kids. My son just had a birthday, so I hooked him up with that. And Mac, what are people into in the chat?
All right, I'll do playing. Metzgirl's playing Earthbound and Minecraft. Also, GURPS and D&D, as always. Let's see. Who else? We've got... Spenis is playing MLB The Show, Super Mario 3D All-Stars, and Super Mario Bros. 35, so you're already preaching to the choir there. Pazzy is playing Atelier Ryza, a very slow and peaceful JRPG focused almost entirely on gathering and grafting with the main character's friends. Interesting. Yeah. But that's what we have for playing.
So as far as what we have for watching, well, y'all aren't watching a lot this week. Just all about the video games, which is totally cool. We got Spenis, who is watching Cobra Kai, NFL football, playoff baseball. He didn't put NBA basketball. I'm very disappointed in you, Spenis. And I think that's it. People aren't watching a lot, dude. People are just playing stuff. Did I miss something?
Mets girls watching Stargate SG-1, and Spear of the Morigantes has been rewatching Avatar: The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. Solid rewatch choices for sure.
I don't know how to read. Apparently, I thought that those were games. Well, no,
it's
very
just
good.
Chat scroll. That's how.
No,
it
that's what it is. Cool.
But yeah.
Well, Mac, why don't you take us home, buddy?
Sure. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, for being a part of episode 160 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. We look forward to seeing you next week at the usual time on Tuesday. But take it easy and keep it nerdy.
Love you guys.
See ya.
Bye.